Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Talking all things Georgia Bulldogs, the entire SEC, and more with our good friend Brooks Austin. He's the director of recruiting for SI's Fan Nation, the lead editor for Dogs Daily, and he's also known better as the film guy. Brooks Austin taking the time to join us. Brooks, what's going on, my man? Your nickname, the film guy, is that as simple as just it is what it is? You watch a lot of film, break down a lot of film. Is there more to that? Why the nickname, the film guy?
So honestly, here's how it happened. Like every time I was ever introduced to a show like this, or anytime anyone would bump into me, or anytime anyone would recognize my content, the only time they ever recognized my content originally was off the film stuff. And they would go, Hey, you're that guy. You're that guy that does the film, right? You stand up on the board and you do the film. And I was like, and it kept every time, like radio announcers would stumble over because they would find my stuff on YouTube and they bring me on. And they try to like figure out how they're going to explain to their audience what I do. And they're like, he's this guy that does the films work on YouTube. And you really got to check him out because he does a great job. So eventually I hate the idea that I named myself, but eventually I was like, dude, I'll just moniker it. Like I'm the guy that does the film. So I'll just be the film guy. And that's kind of what I do. I break down a lot of films, especially in season, off season stuff. I watch a lot of tape, in house.
Sometimes you just got to pick it up and run with it, my friend. I respect that. Brooks, what's the offseason look like for you right now? Obviously, there's no offseason in college football. We got the portal. We got recruiting, right? We're just talking off air. You're talking on camps and, you know, recruits showing off their skills in the classes of 25 and 26, et cetera. But what does that look like right now? I feel like if there's any point in the year that is kind of a dead period of some sort, it's probably this one, maybe middle of summer as well. But what's Brooks Austin up to these days when it comes to talking all things college football and obviously Georgia?
Yeah, I wish my brain would allow me to just kind of hang out and be normal during this quote unquote off season, but it don't really work like that. ADHD don't really work like that at all. This is a big recruiting time for me as a director of recruiting. I try to see as many kids as I possibly can. For example, like yesterday, it was the Under Armour event, the Under Armour Report event here in Atlanta. It's not in Atlanta. It's labeled the Atlanta event. It's in Carrollton. There was probably like 200 of the nation's top prospects here in the Southeast out there, all the way from Mississippi, I think all the way up to Tennessee, North Carolina, down to North Florida, all venturing to Carrollton to compete in various one-on-ones, height, weight, speed events, you know, run a 40, jump a broad jump, and then you get some one-on-one work. A good opportunity to see, like, you know, that the premium prospects from 2025 all the way down to 2027. And then as that event wrapped up, I jetted over to Atlanta to co-host the awards gala for Born to Compete, which here in Atlanta and Metro Atlanta and the state of Georgia, really, Born to Compete is a organization that handles all of Metro, youth sports. So all of the greatest young athletes from the middle school ranks, 6th to 8th, I get my chance to get introduced to those young men, from that opportunity. Coach Smart was there last night. Jimmy Smith, the wide receivers coach from Arkansas, was there last night. It's a well-known and notarized youth sports organization that, man, they've hit on a lot of great players, from KJ Bolden Trevor Lawrence to even our guy Justin Fields out there with the Chicago Bears. So these are guys that Alex Benson has found from, you know, sixth grade all the way up until high school football. So, a busy time for me during the offseason of just trying to see as many people as I possibly can and meet as many faces.
Brooks, you mentioned the gala last night. I was going to say also, in case folks have missed it, head of the timeline, check out the sweater sports coat duo. That was a nice thing for you, man. I appreciate that. Brooks, let's go to a conversation you just had. Dan Lanning, congratulations on that, by the way. Oregon head coach, obviously former Georgia assistant. What were your biggest takeaways from that conversation? I'm sure, obviously, there was a lot to unpack, and I'm sure that was a really impactful conversation. But what was the thing or couple things you took away from that conversation from discussing with the Oregon head coach?
Just how different he is from the tree. Like, I think he gets labeled this, like, Saban tree guy, this smart tree guy. Like, dude, that man does like dozens of interviews this time of the year. Now, he's very selective with the companies that he goes and does business with, but like every person is. But I mean, he does like media interviews with other people. Nick Saban and Kirby Smart don't do that. He's a smiler. Like, he smiles. He has fun. Like, he has all the energy that is required to work as hard as the legends have and the premier of the coaching sport or the profession have. But he's got a different like vibe about him. He's much more. I don't want to use the term personable or relatable, but at least from a media perspective, and I know Kirby and Nick don't act like this around their guys that they work with and the players that they coach. But from a general media outside perspective, Dan Lanning seems far more approachable than the guys that he learned underneath. So he seems very different to me than the other guys, but. Man, it's very obvious to me that even as a young football coach, he's constantly thinking about how, like, the processes and how he's going to improve them. And just like not being afraid to veer away from standard operations. For example, one of the questions I asked him about was his hiring process. Like, dude, man, if you know anything about college football coaches, these guys are habits, like creatures of habit. I know in your area, right, they just brought up Sean Elliott, right, the tight ends coach from Georgia State. That dude never left Columbia because he loves Columbia. He loves South Carolina, a very creature of habit dude. And they hire off of their own trees, and they hire off of guys that they know and coaches that they know. And this coach worked with this coach, and I know this buddy. Dude, he just pulled a coordinator off of a UTSA staff and replaced Kenny Dillingham with him and managed to improve by 7 points. He had no prior existing relationship with that guy. And I think one of the primary requisites or, you know, needed things to be great at coaching and an elite football coach is to be able to not only retain your staff, but replace your staff when they get pulled off. And Lanning's checking a lot of boxes except for Washington last year. That was it. That was the only box he didn't check last year.
Brooks, you mentioned that Sean Elliott thing. I want to ask you about that because on the surface, you know, I think it's a great move for South Carolina. Sean Elliott, a guy that had that previous experience there, was the interim head coach when Steve Spurrier hung it up midseason, and obviously was the run game coordinator for really, I would say, Brooks, the last time that South Carolina had a high-level, consistent running game. So it's a huge boost for the Gamecocks. But there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days of the how that went down. You know, Georgia State had started spring ball, and then he ups and leaves, and now they've postponed it. They've postponed their spring game. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on that. Again, like you mentioned, you've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different coaches. You follow the recruiting side as closely as anybody, so you understand the impact that it has on kids, whether they just got on campus or they're making decisions. Did you have any issue with the way the Sean Elliott thing went down with South Carolina in regards to just the timing of it all?
Yeah, I think issues and things like that, those are emotional responses, and I can understand it. I don't know about the emotions of this decisions. I look at the stone cold hard facts of this, right? And the facts of this are Sean Elliott never really left Columbia. Sean Elliott did a decent to above average and one season a great job at Georgia State over his tenure. But they were also 129th in returning production this year, coming up. And this was also a job that just felt like it was on the downtick, right, for him and just his overall run there at Georgia State. And also, this felt like a football coach, based off of some of the tea leaves that he's left out in the media, that he wasn't really jiving with working like you need to work as a head coach to be a great head coach at the mid-major level. And also, let's be honest about the fact that his salary is a publicly known thing, and he was making about $800,000, and that's an SEC position coaching like salary at a top football program. So there was no, like, there's a demotion in title, but there wasn't a demotion in pay. And you're going back to where your kids are still actively, I believe, playing high school football in Columbia. So if you just look at it on the surface and you just respect this from a human decision, you can understand why Sean Elliott made this decision. And you can also look at it and say, damn, coach, you really had to do this 2 days into spring practice. Well, yeah, and South Carolina needed to hire a tight ends coach because their really, really good tight ends coach just took a head coaching job elsewhere. So we needed to do something quickly, and you weren't necessarily in love with where you were at. So let's get you back to where you are in love, which is Columbia.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Brooks, this offseason, it goes without saying, looks differently for the Georgia Bulldogs than last year. Obviously, this time last year, Georgia coming off a national championship, back-to-back national titles, I might add. You also had, though, some of the chaos and the madness that was happening off the field and You know, I know Kirby Smart obviously talked about, you know, we're never going to be the hunted. We're going to be the hunter. You fighting complacency. That's what you continue to fight day in, day out, especially when you've won back-to-back titles. But my question to you, Brooks, is this. How much different does this offseason look for Georgia compared to last year? And could it actually be a great thing for the Bulldogs? Because they were combating a lot. I mean, it felt like it sort of compounded. And then we got in the season, and it's like Georgia couldn't win by enough, because when you're being measured up against, it's not about are you the best team in the SEC. It's about are you good enough to win three straight national titles. Like, there was a lot going on. It feels like it's a little bit calmer waters this offseason. Do you think that could lead to some bigger things for Georgia down the road?
Yeah, a much quieter offseason for sure. You're 100% correct on that. The thing that they've been fighting this offseason, and they're continuing to fight right now, is the NFL. They're swatting the NFL off to save their staff. I mean, Brian McClendon just got picked off recently to go. I mean, he took the same title. He was a wide receivers coach and a pass game coordinator at the University of Georgia. He took the same title at Tampa because the NFL knows what everybody else has been told, which is that college football coaches right now are not exactly, I'm not going to say they're not happy. They're not in love with the nature of the sport right now. If you talk to any college football coach, well, you probably can't get them on the phone because they're probably getting berated by their own roster right about now because it's the dead period. So they can't be out hunting, you know, the next kid to berate them for a raise constantly. But that's what's happening right now. College football coaches and position coaches in particular, head coaches are having to deal with the stress of this. But position coaches in college football right now are constantly under threat of, my guy just threatened me with a new raise elsewhere. Is it real? I don't know. I would have to call that school that he just threatened me with to find out. And even if it was true or even if it wasn't, that guy's going to tell me, I don't know what you're talking about. So it's a whole lot of blind bluffing games and blind threats and empty threats. Do I live up to this? Is this kid good enough? Can I replace him? Oh, shit, there's the portal. Oh, my God, how do I get under 85? It's just a mess right now when you could just go coach the tight 53 in pro ball and probably get a raise for doing so. So, and you're seeing the NFL skew younger because these types of players who have had all of this freedom during their college football career, well, guess where they're at now? They're in pro ball. And guess what they don't want to do? They don't want to listen to hard-edged coaches. So they're having to resort to younger guys that can quote-unquote relate to them. So the world of college football is what it is, but the world of college football coaching is, I wouldn't say under attack, but it's definitely under some loose gravel for sure.
Brooks, Georgia, of course, going to be one of the favorites in 2024 to win it all yet again. Going into spring ball, what would you say is the top storyline for Georgia? Maybe some of the loose ends they're going to try to tighten up once they get into spring practice.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about it. They lost their wide receivers coach. I mean, this is wild to me. For as well as Georgia recruits at every other position, check this out. There's like seven names. You can't, I mean, if you're going like 9-10 deep in a wide receiver core, it's like an NBA bench. They're like last three guys. They're not getting used, so let's not even talk about them. But let's talk about their wide receiver core and corpse, I guess you could write it. We talk about it in core, spell it corpse. That's always been weird to me. Let's talk about their wide receiver core, right? You got guys like Colby Young that just came in. London Humphreys just came in. Michael Jackson III just came in. Rob Thomas is returning, right? They need a big year. Dominic Lovett, that's a guy that's returning from a transfer. They need a big year. Those are five transfer names. Oh, and then they got we'll call them homegrown talents in Dylan Bell and Anthony Evans Jr. And then we, like, on the verge there, we're going to talk about names like Tyler Williams. But in the tight seven, tight eight, only like two guys that they've recruited. The other five that they're dependent upon are guys that they have had to steal from other rosters via the portal or grab from other rosters via the portal. That, to me, is not what Kirby Smart is about. He has talked about it ad nauseum with regards to the portal is a Band-Aid solution. The portal is not a cultural builder. We are not trying to build the foundation off the portal that will not sustain. Well, they have built the foundation of the wide receiver room out of the portal, and those are all great players. They might boom, but Georgia doesn't have a Jameson Williamson history. Like, they don't have a Joe Burrow. They don't, like, name the great transfer at the University of Georgia. They haven't hit home runs. They've hit ground rule doubles. They've hit Trey McKitties, come in and start for us. They've hit Eli Wolfs, come in and start for us. They've hit guys that have played well. The biggest home run might be J.R. Reed. And guys outside of the Georgia space would be like, Yeah, J.R. Reed was a good football player, but he's not like a dude, not like a first-round draft pick. So I'm not saying you have to hit on these things, but they don't have a superstar right now, a guaranteed bona fide dude at the wide receiver position. They've got a lot of guys that they brought in from other places that they are hoping become dudes at their university. So that would be the one room I look at and be like, man, for like 4 years, I write articles every single year. Will this year be the year Georgia has a 1,000-yard receiver? And Alabama had a year a couple years ago where they had two of some bitches. So I there you go. That would be the area that I would point at.
Brooks, I want to ask you about what you're expecting from this guy on the field. But first, how do you feel like Georgia fans have embraced Trevor Etienne? Because, you know, I know it's the portal era where it's free agency and guys can up and go anywhere. It doesn't matter the school. They can go in conference. Doesn't matter. But Georgia-Florida is a real rivalry. There's a lot of hatred. And so going from wearing that Florida uniform to wearing that Georgia uniform, like, I know dog fans, I'm sure, are just elated he's going to be on their side, being productive in the running game, what he's going to mean. But, like, what's the embrace been like? Has there been any mixed feelings, honestly, or is it just kind of an acceptance of, hey, this is where we are, we just glad you're wearing our colors now?
Yeah, it don't hurt until they're good. That's the way this works. We all know this. Every fan base operates this way. If Brenton Cox leaves Georgia and is okay at Florida, but he's really just kind of bad, not great, you know, he's not good, then it's okay. It's all fun and games. Y'all got what's left of our roster, right? If Jermaine Johnson, however, goes to Florida State and becomes a first-round draft pick, everybody's like, what the hell? If Justin Fields is sitting in New York the year after he leaves Georgia, like, Kirby Smart still has to listen to that shit. You know what I mean? Like, he won a title, two titles with Stetson Bennett, which was only a roster spot that was open because Justin Fields transferred to Ohio State. And because Justin Fields was a first-round draft pick, he still has to listen to that every once in a while as a, you made the wrong decision. So none of this matters unless the guy leaves and is good. If the guy comes from a different program and is going to help your roster, it's all fair and game. Like, we all are fine with that. That's how fandom works. I think that's across the board. You know, you're a South Carolina fan. How does Jaheim Bell sit in your craw? How's Marshawn Lloyd feel? How do those operate for you?
Well, they were pretty good at their next stop. So, yeah, it's mixed feelings, to say the least. And I correct. Think I speak for most of Gamecock Nation.
But if they were duds, you would be like, ha,
yeah, can't no live biggie. Without. No biggie, right?
Yeah, you know
got,
what I mean?
You got what's left. You got yeah.
We squeezed every bit of juice
yeah,
out.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you can have the leftovers. On the note of Trevor Etienne, though, I think the good news for Georgia, bad news for Florida, he's going to be one of the best running backs, maybe if not the best running back in the SEC in 2024. Your thoughts on what he's going to mean to that offense? And I can't help, but we're going to get to quarterback in a second, but I can't help but think, Brooks, that, you know, we look last year and what Mike Bobo did, and I mean the numbers, it was incredible. And I'm like, this Georgia offense very well could be better. Like you mentioned, they got to figure out wide receiver, and, you know, you got to replace guys like Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. And it's like, I don't think it's about talent with Georgia. It's just, who's going to be the guy late in the Auburn game that makes the plays when you need him, right? And that's what Brock Bowers was, and he was in many other games. But this offense very well could be better, and a lot of it could have to do with the Trevor Etienne at the running back position, what he's going to give the Dogs in the running game.
You're 100% correct in this sense right here. Georgia will be so solid up front. They got to figure out center. Like, Jared Wilson's got to, like, he's got to become a guy. You know what I mean? Like, to make this all be true. But from the talent and the returning depth up on the offensive line, at the University of Georgia, your job as the running back is to take care of the plus one defender. What do I mean by that? Well, the five down guys, I promise you, they're going to pick up five. They're going to handle their business 9 times out of 10. So we are one, make a miss, like make the linebacker miss that's free, make the front side safety miss that's free. We are one, make a miss away from an explosive run on 90% of your runs at the University of Georgia. It's not that drastic, but it's far more drastic at Georgia than most programs, right? And Trevor Etienne's like primary like plus traits are the first defender rarely brings him down. And even if he does, it's plus. It's yards after the contact point for that football player. The one area of improvement is going to have to be pass protection, but we can say that about a lot of backs. But yeah, I am bullish on the idea that they're going to bring in a guy. And this is why I think Dejon Edwards had so much success at the University of Georgia. His ability to make that first guy miss was unquestionable for 3-4 years. And it's why he always had, a positive stat line every time he looked at it. So I don't see games where we look up and we're like, daggum, Trevor Etienne has been held to 2.8 yards per carry today. That just won't happen. He's too good of a back, got too good of a vision. He's too hard to bring down.
Brooks, I mentioned Brock Bowers, and there's arguably no replacing what might be the best tight end in college football history. But if you looked at this Georgia roster right now, who do you think could be that next Brock Bowers? Is there a guy like that on this roster that could be at least at minimum that, I feel like the thing with Brock Bowers, he was, again, that clutch, that go-to when Georgia needed a play. It felt like 19 was always there in some form or fashion. Is there another guy on this roster you think has that potential?
So I want to – what, in my opinion, what made Brock Bowers elite is his contact balance and his contact strength. Like, anytime he got hit, you saw, like, very little effect upon him. So his yards after the catch were tremendous. You saw Georgia get the ball in his hands in a variety of different ways because of this. That portion of a replacement in the tight end room – I don't believe anyone will ever be that again for them. Like, there's clips of him running like tight end angles against Georgia Tech and then like grabbing the ball, catching the ball at the 20-yard line and splitting two safeties playing cover two down the middle of the field. These are two guys standing at the damn hash, okay, standing at the hashes, and he runs right down the middle of them. I don't think you'll ever see that again from the tight end room. However, from a after-the-catch standpoint, from a physical trait standpoint, Oscar Delp is an NFL like body. Oscar Delp is 6'5". He's 250 pounds, and when he was around me on the recruiting circuit in high school, like, I multiple times hand timed him sub 4'6" in the 4'5" range. So from a height, weight, speed perspective, Oscar Delp is that guy. Now, give him some run, see what he looks like in an extended role. We'll find out what he actually, like, what his ceiling is. I think I know what his floor is. His floor is 450 yards. His floor is, a standard passable grade tight end in the SEC. Will he be a 650-yard guy this year? That's left up to him, and that's left up to the usage. They just brought in Jurecek, the kid out of Stanford. Now, he has one of these 650-yard seasons, his sophomore year. His junior year is kind of banged up. He's kind of molded as this yards-after-catch guy at Stanford. If you look at what his usage at Stanford, how they used him, it was very much so the bells and whistles that sometimes you saw Georgia use, Bowers in that facet in years past, screens, reverses. Giving a jet sweep to a tight end sounds like out of your mind. Like, why would you ever do that? Well, this guy can really go, coach, and he's really tough to tackle. It's almost like having a 6'4 running back out there. Okay, we'll sign up for that. I don't know if you'll have another one of those, but that's what made that guy a unicorn. So they got plenty of depth, and you get into names like Lawson Lucky and Pierce Sperling. I think Lawson's play time definitely got impacted by the Jurecek addition. They got plenty of depth there. It's a matter of the top-end ceiling for sure.
Brooks, as you and I both know, it starts with the trigger man in the SEC in college football, and Carson Beck was one of the best. I still say I think he was massively underrated last year. You look at his numbers, the type of year that he had, where Georgia ranked in regards to passing yards per game, and I think coming into 2024, if you're talking about Heisman Trophy odds and what's a good bet and where's the value, I still think Brooks, Carson Beck, yet again, is a great play. I mean, do you view him as underrated? Is that fair? I just tend to feel like he's a very underappreciated player at quarterback for Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know how you finish top five in yards, and I think he completed 72.7% of his passes last year. Like, how do you throw for 4,000 yards at 73% completion percentage and are underrated on a top five football
program?
Do
you feel like he gets punished for being on a good team?
I here's what I think it is, because I'm with you. He definitely does not get the attention he deserves. People don't talk about his talent the way that they should. Two things. He checks the football down way too much for people who like fun shit, and he's just kind of boring. Like, and just from an outside perspective, if you didn't know, he drives a Lambo truck. That's pretty cool. But he don't look like Jackson Dart. He don't look like Caleb Williams. I can't explain it. It's the only theory I have, because when you study him, when you watch him, and you actually look at bro, he is playing the position. You know what I mean? Like, he's not doing highlight shit. He's not bailing out of the pocket early, rolling to his right, and throwing a ball on the run that made the highlight clips on SportsCenter. But what he is doing is, that's cloud coverage. I'm going to wait for that corner to bite down on the arrow, and then I'm going to throw the corner right here on time on my three-step, no hitch. That's boring to you. You see him throw a corner route, and you're like, ah, man, Brock Bowers is great. I'm like, yeah, but I watched him deke that corner with his shoulders and his eyes for like a half a step in his three-step drop. And like, again, you got to be a super nerd to study it, but there's also a reason why even after only 13 starts, there were like, I would say 40% of the NFL had a first-round grade on that kid because they saw what is boring, but they saw what plays on Sundays. I think C.J. Stroud got a little bit of this during his Ohio State run. People weren't really watching it. They're just like, oh, Ohio State quarterbacks don't develop. Ohio State quarterbacks don't work in the league. And then I watched him. But even studying before the Georgia game, I'm like, dude, that's his third read. That's his second read. That's his third read check down. Like, he is processing, clicking through them. And if you can click through them and you can get the ball to the right guy, then you are playing quarterback. Like, that is the position, and nobody wants to talk about that. Everybody wants to talk about, ooh, look at all this cool shit. Cool shit's fun, but Patrick Mahomes won Super Bowls this year doing fun stuff. They weren't beating teams by 40. They weren't scoring 45 points. They were playing the game and managing the game at 28, 29, 30, 30 points every single game and leaning on good defense. And that's the greatest quarterback in the world. But again, he did a lot of boring stuff this year, but he made his name off the fun shit. Carson Beck don't do fun shit. Carson Beck does quarterback stuff. And unless you're studying it, it really doesn't make a whole lot of highlights.
Brooks, you can go into as much detail or as little detail into this as you want, because I'm sure you know a guy who knows a guy and maybe knows a guy. And so you've got a little bit different perspective than some with the Caleb Downs situation. Obviously, he transfers to Ohio State. What happened with that, and how surprised are you that he didn't end up in Athens?
So I think he committed on a Friday night, like 5 o'clock, right? A Friday night, like 8:30. I was in Atlanta at another workout. So I remember where I was because I got a phone call from his camp right after the news broke. Hey, because here's how this works. It's like big head honchos, ESPN, national coverage, right? And then eventually it'll trickle down to the lower level local guy that's been covering him since he was 14. You would think it would be inverse. Hey, let's call the guy that's been around the family since middle school. And let's, you know what I mean? But it don't work like that. It's big head honcho, and then it trickles down. So by the time I got the phone call, I had already gotten the Twitter notification of the news having been broke. So that's kind of how it works. But from a knowledge standpoint, how did this operate? Broke down, committed on Friday. I was told somewhere midweek, like whether it be like Wednesday, let's call it Wednesday. I was told Wednesday there was a phone call to Georgia. It was like, hey, it's you guys. Hey, we're just going to come there. We feel comfortable. T-Rob's there. System's there. No change. Like, y'all are a national program. We're going to be a first-round draft pick in a couple of years anyways. Let's just go be comfortable. Those are familiar faces, right? Very unfamiliar place to us. They live in Georgia, but dad was a college football coach. Like, they don't have identity structures. You know what I mean? Like, some people who don't understand this lifestyle don't understand that coaches, they don't resonate to one local area. They're nomads. They go around where the work is, you know what I'm saying? Where the promotion is. So this identity structure of a local place, it doesn't exist with this particular circumstance. And I would argue most coaches' sons. So it happened on Wednesday. Thought Georgia, hey, strong. That's why I think you saw a lot of people, myself included, on the Georgia end start hammering. Like, hey, predictions are in, recruiting industries, Whitflaw and bombs, blah, 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 sliding scale majiggies. We're all like, hey, Downs to Georgia. And then as time proceeds, right, as things start happening and as time prevails, like, he still had to wait a 48-hour rule out. I think a lot of people forgot he couldn't actually commit until Friday, I believe it was. He put his name in the portal, I think Tuesday, and there's a 48-hour hold before the paperwork's actually in. So in that time span, Ohio State worked their way in. Texas even worked their way in. But Ohio State obviously was the main culprit. And a lot of stories about, money and promises, and I don't like the pocket watch. We don't really do that on my network. Kids make money. We all know this. I don't feel like boiling it down to, hey, they gave him a Bugatti. I don't know this stuff. But here's what I know. I know that there were certain football stipulations per my sourcing, and the football stipulations were this. Wanted to be a punt returner and a kick returner. Obviously wanted to play safety in a good system that prioritized safeties. And Coach Bowles' system up there, it's more of a three safety system. It's exactly that up at Ohio State. They prioritize safety play. And I was told, and I believe this, I was told he wants to play a little bit of offense. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, Caleb Downs wants to win a Heisman. Caleb Downs wants to win a Heisman, and his people want him to win a Heisman. And by the way, I think he's very capable of winning a Heisman. I think he's the one of the best. If you put him in a top three collection of position players in college football, I'd put him there. Like, if you studied him in Alabama this year, he was basically running their entire back end as a true freshman. Got first-round draft picks turning around, asking number two what to do. Like, well, he's a great football player, and yeah, if it were 8 to 10 snaps on offense this year or next year, I would not be surprised.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand, and he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brooks, last thing, and we'll get you out of here. You mentioned the landscape of college coaching changing quickly. When you talk on Kirby Smart, I think there's many that have speculated that maybe the thing that's going to hold Kirby back from reaching the heights Nick Saban did was because of this era of college football with NIL, the portal, and obviously I'm not speaking to how he feels about it, but like you mentioned, it just takes a toll to any coach out there. Do you ever worry about the potential of, you know, Kirby Smart may come into a year and say, you know what, I want to take a shot at the NFL, I just want to coach ball, I don't want to really want to deal with being a general manager and a negotiator along with being the head football coach and coach of ball. Do you ever think about that? Is that something that, I mean, do Georgia fans, I guess, speculate on the long-term future? Because Kirby obviously has built a monster there in Athens.
You know, he truly loves coaching at the University of Georgia. I mean, it's very special to him. The NFL stuff would be about ego, and every coach got ego. So let's put that out there. Every coach thinks they can do it. If there's a job or a task or a problem or a goal or whatever, every coach looks at that and says, I'm the guy. I'm signing up. I'm going to do that. So maybe the NFL is a thing. I think burnout is the thing that's going to get this dude more than anything. And here's one thing that I've noticed about him. He's not playing crazy with this NIL stuff. He never was. From the jump, he was – from an outsider's perspective and even an insider's perspective, it seemed very much to me like Georgia's approach to this has been, hey, let's just survive until some type of regulation comes, because eventually it'll come. And I do believe that. Eventually, whether it be a super league, whether it be the NCAA actually figuring out this $6 million sub league that they're talking about, whatever it is, eventually this will come to balance. And I think as long as he survives to that, the love of football and the constant drive to coach will eventually keep him around. It's the same thing that kept Saban around. But the idea that someone's going to coach until their early 70s under the state of what it is now, no. There's no way in hell. So he'll never catch him from a longevity standpoint. But will he last 10 more years under this structure? I don't even believe that. I don't think anyone's lasting a decade the way we're doing it right now. But – you know, there's got to be some type. I think one portal window is the thing that Lanning mentioned. Like, if you just give us one portal window, that cuts December, you know, nightmare out of the way. Like, we just get rid of that. And, oh, by the way, how, like, player of mobility is fine. Like, player mobility is great. I want y'all to be able to go. If coaches can leave, you should be able to leave. We all believe that. But the one window would actually keep these kids on campus for a full year. And from just a young man's perspective, like being able to stay in one spot for a full year and, hey, just wait it out. I know you hate it now, but in 10 months, you might be okay. In 10 months, you might be fine. Instead, now we have these, like, it's almost like semi-annual decisions. Like, should I quit now or should I quit in 6 months? Well, just get there and let's hang out a year. I think that would be way, way, way safer for the longevity of this sport, other than this, just like, we're basically like, if you know anything about recruiting, the state of Florida is like this. In Florida, you can play football somewhere. You can play basketball another place. You can run track at another spot. And by the fall, you can be back at another school playing football. It's a freaking mess. Look at high school sports right now in Florida. And that's basically where we're heading in college football, if you're not careful.
Brooks Austin, a Dogs Daily, director of recruiting for SI's Fan Nation, and of course, better known as the Film Guy. Brooks, it's a pleasure, man. I appreciate you taking the time. Let's definitely do it again soon.
No doubt, brother.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.